round, round, get around. I get around, yeah, get around, round, round. I gotta find a new place where the kids are hip.
Check, 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 check. Yo, 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 hey. Hey, how's it going out there? Welcome back, or welcome you all, first-time listeners. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
And you're, in fact, listening to the one and only Carolyn and Joe Show. That's right. That's right. We're back. And you know what? This show is exactly... This is the first show of October. And you know what? To me, it's not even a challenge anymore. It's obvious. Summer is done. What'd you guys do over the summer? I hope it was pretty awesome. But summer's gone, Carolyn.
It's gone, and I feel like I didn't have much of a summer, but I know that you had a crazy summer.
But before we get into that, what's the news?
The news! All right, coming up very soon, in a couple weeks, October 11th through 14th, Curl Studio will be at New York Comic Con.
Yes.
We will be in Artist Alley. I don't know the number right off the top of my head, but if I had to guess, it was W12. I know it's definitely in the W row of Artist Alley. But if it's not W12, it might be W something else.
But we're definitely going to be there.
We're gonna be there.
Depending on whenever you listen to this show, possibly in a week and a half or this coming week. But we'll have one more show to talk about this massive, again, I don't even know what year it is, but our fifth year at New York Comic Con? It might be, you know, who knows?
Maybe.
It might be, because fifth or fourth, one of those things.
And then on October 27th, we're going to be at Annapolis Comic Con, and on December 15th, we're going to be up in Philly at the Rotunda.
That's right. Annapolis Comic Con, man, coming up. It's going to be the freaking Carolyn and Joe Show live and in stereo. It's going to happen.
A live event. Be there. It's our first ever live event of the radio show.
So
we've done panels and other things before, but it's the first ever live Carolyn and Joe Show.
So if you guys get a chance, come out. Come out and listen to us live. It's going to be we're going to try to put on a show for you, or we're going to try to answer the questions that you want to know about, or we're going to try to talk about things that might be a little bit too racy. But it's a kids and family. It's, you know, it's a family friendly show, so we'll keep it exciting.
And like, clean.
But, I mean, we're family and friendly anyway.
Except for when we get riled up talking about Chris Brown.
Yeah.
Or some other idiot.
Well, that guy's not. And when we talk about things not family friendly, we're not, you know, when we talk about stupid stuff like Chris Brown, it sort of sets us on edge. It sort of opens up a whole can of worms. Pandora's box gets busted open. Of righteousness, guys.
Yeah, so that means we have three events in our tour for 2012. And this...
And something awesome.
Yeah.
You know, something awesome in 2013
awesome.
That you guys got to keep your ear close to the ground about. But it will be awesome.
So at New York Comic Con, do you know more guests that have been announced? Because I know we've talked about it in previous episodes, but I guess Carrie Fisher is a new one that's been added.
Yeah,
so Carrie... Princess Leia is going to be there.
Carrie Fisher, I guess since... I guess a lot of you guys who listen to the show know that we're fans of wrestling. They got a whole bunch of wrestling valets or former wrestling valets. Booker T is going to be there. Beautiful People is going to be there. Bella Twins is going to be there. Kelly is going to be there. The whole Walking, what it feels like, the whole Walking Dead cast is going to be there as well.
Arrow, the cast of Arrow.
Yeah, the cast of Arrow. Also, Jane Espenson, probably repping her new TV show, Husbands. Probably a Playboy Playmate or supermodel or something, some sort. Redhead, blonde, brunette,
also,
one of those.
Christopher Lloyd is going to be
Oh,
there.
Yeah, Christopher Lloyd, Uncle Fester himself. Also, for you guys who are fans of that show, what was it, Stacked?
With Pam Anderson.
Yeah, with Pam Anderson. Back to the Future. So, Christopher Lloyd, man.
He's all over the place. Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd's
going to
be there.
I'm actually, out of all the guests...
1.1 gigawatts!
Out of all the guests that they have announced so far, I'm the most excited about Christopher Lloyd.
It's weird that Christopher Lloyd is... I don't know if he does conventions or not, but I feel like he should in a way. But like, that's such a legendary guy that does not age, in my perspective.
He's like the quintessential mad scientist. That's why I like him. I dig him.
Also, like Grant Morrison, Brian K. Vaughan, everyone in DC and Marvel, they're all going to be there. And we're going to be there, damn it. We're always going to be representing Curl Studio. That's what we do. We make the best freaking comics. We make comics that are not your typical comics, but it's something that's definitely they're the best characters you will ever see in your whole entire life. I swear to God, that's what we make, and that's what we want to make, and that's how we do this thing.
For sure. And we're going to have free copies of Magic Bullet with us New York. And we're also going to be selling the District Comics book and a whole bunch of other stuff.
And since you guys know that we are from the DC area, and it's always a shock to find out about this, but we are there's not many people from the DC area going to be at New York, so we're repping DC.
I think it's like so interesting that like out of, a lot of people like congregate onto New York Comic Con. Obviously, like, everyone that's from New York that can make it is going to be there as well, but people from all over come in for New York Comic Con. But as far as like the DC area, the only people that I know that are going to be there are us and Steve Conley.
So,
do you know anyone else? Like, that's all I know.
I mean,
I might be missing.
I guess you
somebody,
can count Rafer in the DC area.
Yeah, Rafer. That is right. Rafer is going to be there.
But he's going to be as like a roaming source.
He's still going to be there, and that counts.
Yeah.
So like, really, out of like, that's only four people out of the DC area that are going to be there. So I mean, I think that's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome. So we're representing DC, guys, and in the Big Apple. We got the Big Apple versus the Big Con. So. That's what we're going to be. I'm looking forward to it. I look forward to it every single year. But, of course, with every coming end with every beginning of the comic book convention season, it marks the end of summer. And did you have good summer memories, Carolyn?
Like, honestly, I didn't really have much of a summer. I just remember, like, working and just getting through a lot of stuff that needed to be taken care of, and I don't, like, I didn't really, like, lounge at the beach or go on any trips. Like, I don't know, I didn't actually go anywhere. So, like, I might have had maybe, like, three of those type of days where it was, like, a relaxing day. So out of my whole summer, I really didn't have a summer.
So it was a work summer.
A work summer,
unlike
totally.
Unlike the school, like, if you're going to school or part of the school system, or anything like that. I always see these teachers on the internet or Facebook when they post those little pictures that are trying to show the commentary of their life. They go like, the reason why I teach, and they have like a calendar that circles like June, July, and August.
Those are pretty good incentives, though. Think about that. Plus, if you're a teacher, you get like all those holiday times. You get like that Christmas break and the spring break. Yeah.
But we get none of that.
We
work multiple jobs.
I mean, it's all part of their deal, like they knew that going into it. We knew what we were getting into going into it, that we don't get summer break. But yeah, I mean, good for them. That's all I can say about that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that rocks that they get all that time off. But then, during the rest of it, I'm sure they're like, oh man, I gotta make curriculum or whatever, however you pronounce that.
Curriculum.
How do you pronounce that word?
Curriculum?
That's a hard one for me to like process. How do you say it? I gotta get it right.
Curriculum.
Curriculum.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah, that one's like a brain twister for me. But but basically they gotta work on that, and they gotta do a whole bunch of other stuff and deal with like parent teacher conferences.
Do you have any like fond summer memories? From this past summer, like, was there something cool that happened for you that that would live on in infamy of like the summer of 2012, the last summer before the end of the world, or something else like that?
What I do remember is going to a couple concerts.
That's cool.
We did go to a couple concerts. Seeing Jack White was pretty cool.
That's true. That was.
And Jane's Addiction. So I guess, like, if I had to mark this summer, I would bracket with those concerts.
It's interesting that, like, we record our basically our whole lives now. Every week we have this podcast, and people people will wonder why we don't stick with one subject matter, or why we, you know, we're like, I remember we were talking with the Adam from the Dollar Bin over at Small Press Expo when we were comparing our shows, our podcasts, and you know, I guess they mainly stay in that entertainment realm, you know, comics and or movies and stuff like that.
Well, Dollar Bin podcast is pretty much like just their analysis on comics only.
Yeah, and he was then Adam made the comment to us. Or me or us, he's like, yeah, but you guys, Carolyn, Joe, you sort of go outside the box. You guys touch on things like outside of that world, and it's true, we do. That's actually what it is. It's always we want to brand the show not about just this one thing, but you know, existentially about us. And that's what it's always broken down to.
I mean, look at the title of the show, though.
Exactly. I mean, but Jay Leno doesn't just talk about himself.
That's true.
So I mean.
Check out my car collection.
Is that
how he talks?
Yeah. And there's one big elephant in the room this whole entire summer that has yet to be spoken of very clearly and very, very structurally on this show, which marking the end of summer with this first October episode of the Carolyn and Joe show, maybe it's about time that I actually talked about it.
Definitely. Because you had amazing summer, really.
I'll pose this as a question towards you, Carolyn, or you can ask me questions so I don't just set myself up with this. We can do a Q&A about my summer experience.
Yeah, Joe's summer. The summer of Joe. Well, basically, Joe had an experience this summer that, like, you know, I wouldn't disregard it at all. Although it does feel like we both did not have any type of summer, Joe actually had a summer that only very few people got to experience. So, like, really, if you think about it, Joe, you had a very special summer that, like, seriously, literally only, like, a handful of people ever got to experience. So if you think about it that way, your summer was super special. So basically, let me preface this by saying that Joe is a one-of-a-kind summer. And
Joe is a one-of-a-kind summer.
Yeah, I mean,
I am a summer.
You are a summer.
I'm a season.
You had a one-of-a-kind summer, and you worked hard to, like, get into that position, and it's just amazing, like, just knowing that you do love music, and knowing that you got into, like, somehow got into that position to be a part of the 2012 Beach Boys 50-year reunion tour. Is amazing, because, like, this is, from what I know, you know, they don't tour, like, as a full group, the traditional Beach Boys, much at all, and actually now it was revealed, like, just this past few days ago that they are broken up again to a different formation of the Beach Boys, but Joe got to, like, experience the last U.S. and Canadian tour of the Beach Boys together. As we know of the traditional Beach Boys, the official Beach Boys.
I guess in short, I'd like to announce officially here that I toured with the Beach Boys.
Yeah, I mean,
it's always interesting and weird to say that, but I didn't open up for the Beach Boys. I did not. As everyone knows that my I guess it's weird to say this, but it's also really real to say this, but my day job is working in film production. People always wonder what that means. It really goes from I produce to sometimes I record sound, you know, and that's my job. That is the bread and butter maker here. You look up my name. That's what I do. You get that and you get comics and you get whoa, what are these other things that Joe does?
Well, just knowing that, like, when you first got this assignment, like, you told me, and I was like, whoa, that's awesome, because you authentically are a fan of the Beach Boys. Like, you have also covered their music long before this tour ever happened.
You know,
So it's like, you know their catalog, you know stuff about them, you know, you're not at that point where you're, like, obviously stalker level, because you didn't even know, like, who was who on the band, because I was like, wait, so who's this guy and who's this guy, and you didn't know at that point, like, exactly everybody in the band. But you knew their songs, you knew their material, and you knew what they did.
Even Mr. Bandit played Beach Boys songs, you know what I mean?
Yeah, for a long time ago.
So basically, a year, not even a year ago, but this past year in the Grammys, the Beach Boys finally reunited with Brian Wilson, Al Jardine, Mike Love. I mean, basically the whole band got back together. except for the two Wilson brothers that passed away, which were and if they were there, that would have made it the complete original band.
Okay, so that's the original.
Yeah, but those guys are dead. We can't bring them back. But what's interesting is they did bring them back live
in hologram.
Tupac? Like Tupac in a weird form. But basically, it's weird how this. I'll just dive right into it. It's weird how this happened in my head. It's weird how this happened in real life too. The Beach Boys did a reunion reunion performance on the Grammys, and you know, already at that point I was checking out some Brian Wilson stuff by himself, you know, but when I watched that show on the Grammys, I realized, and I watched it, I was like, holy crap, this was the best performance of the night.
Of the whole Grammys.
Of the whole entire thing. I was already psyched about that. I was excited. I was like, holy crap, Beach Boys getting back together? They're going to play live? This is going to be sick. You know what I mean? Because, like, I don't know. It's just, I love surf music. And it's, you know, people know me. They know me musically. That's the first thing I say, is I love surf music. And the type of music I play is like space surf or whatever the hell you want to. Space surf blues, if you want, however you want to classify that. But for me, seeing the Beach Boys like a reunion like that, like, was a lot to me, and the fact that they freaking rocked the house was massive. I thought that was just going to be the end of it. You know, I would have never imagined that anything like this would happen. That was like, I don't know, maybe that was in February or something like that.
Yeah, Grammys are usually around February.
Yeah, so that was, you know, there's a long time, and there's a big void. There's a certain amount of months in 2012 that's a big void that I don't really remember well anymore. That's sort of, not, it didn't just fade away, but there's certain things that just sort of blended together. And the month of June, specifically, I feel like was a month that, like, just, I don't remember what happened. Part of me feels like it's just like, I was just working and then just gone, you know? But there's one thing that I really do remember, and I remember getting a call. You know, and I'm not even sure if I'm even allowed to talk about any of this, actually, but who gives a fuck? It's my show.
Wait, we're family friendly.
Oh yeah. But at the you know, I'm not really sure how much, but you know, this is, we got, I want to keep this alive, but I got a call. I'll keep names. Yeah. Well, I will keep names
you know, withheld. Yeah.
Cause that's the one thing I said, I wasn't going to spoil any of the show, but I'll say I got a call from a coworker, a simple call. I get millions of calls. This is just how it is. We all call each other, and we're asking for help or we're asking for this. But basically, he was asking for help. Help on gear. Like he needed some sort of gear, and questions on gear that he has never used before. And I was like, well, I've used that a whole lot, and I've used that setup a whole lot. And then the question was prefaced to me. I was like, all right, keep this on the down low. But I'm about to go on tour with a big, like a. Like, I just got, he was, like, a guy that I've shot documentaries for before is covering a massive band that you probably might be out of your age, or, you know what I mean? Like, out of your generation. But for me, for him, it was, like, a massive band that he knows.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, this is might be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Things are, it's not, you know, like, everything in this work, in everything
it's
in my work.
It's not definite, but
yeah,
it's not definite.
It's penciled in, but it's not hardcore yet, but it's going to probably happen. So it's one of those things. I'm just like, you know, I hear that all the time. So I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever.
Yeah. So many of your jobs, just by, like, you know, I guess seeing it secondhand, is so many of your jobs are basically like, hey, are you free on this day? But pencil it in. And like, nothing's ever like completely firm really until like hours before.
Yeah. So literally every time I get an option for a job, I'm just like, I'm 1 foot out the door, 1 foot in the door. Like, I'm ready to go and I'm ready to leave. So I'm not, you know, I'm ready to go. I'm ready to leave at any second, or I'm ready to like not, you know, it's not heartbroken if it doesn't happen, but it is heartbroken if it doesn't happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And also, especially when you're trying to coordinate multiple things, so you can't be at two places at one time.
So basically when one of my comrades told me that, like, this is what it is. And I was like, oh, cool. So, you know, I do my normal, like, oh, cool. Like, it's not like I'm going
to
work
so,
on it.
So when you got to that point where you basically knew that there was a band that might be out of your age group, but is a very prominent band, in your head, did you ever try to break down who exactly it was without knowing who it was?
No, I didn't give a fuck.
I need the work.
So I was going to see what it really didn't matter. I was like, usually for me, it's like, all right, what's the date and how much? Yeah. You know what I mean? But, you know,
I just wondered if you were curious to be like, I wonder.
No, I wasn't. I personally was never curious, because at the same time, it's not like I can be a super fan at the same time. Yeah. I can't really go into my work rolling being like, I love, oh my God, this is here. Yeah. But basically at this point, I was like, well, I know this gear. I know this. And I didn't say like, should I work for you? But I gave him the impression that I can, hopefully gave him the impression that I can do this, and I would be a pivotal component to the production. And then at that point, you know, it worked. So he's like, oh, what would you be doing for the next 3 weeks starting then? And I was like, whoa, 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 what? So it's like, again, it's one of those situations of like, you know, when they're asked like, do you think you can leave next week and you'll be out for like 3 weeks or something like that? You know, that's the part of my job that's always like, wow, how do you prepare? You don't really get a chance. Every job is a preparation for the next job, but every job is sort of like, whoa, you know.
Yeah.
I gotta, you know, you gotta like, you know, it is like going for, it's almost like getting set to war in camp at the same time. You just gotta be ready, and you just don't know. You gotta be able to, so like, I was like, I don't know yet. I got things booked and I gotta move them around. You know what I mean? So I was like sort of hesitant, because I hate saying I can't do a job after I've already done a job. But at this point, I said like, I'm interested, but let me see if I can work it out. And he says like, all right, call me, I'll call you back tomorrow. And then when he called me back the next day, and I was like, all right, I think I was able to maneuver some things. And he's like, all right, I want to break it down to you now. You ever, like, this might be out of your generation, but have you ever heard of the Beach Boys? And I was like, yeah, I've heard of the Beach Boys. And he's like, well, you know, I was like, yeah, they just had their 50th anniversary. I saw them, you know, I just spilled it out. And like, oh, all right. So, you know, they're having their tour, and I'm going to be, you know, I'm headlining this documentary that's not headlining, but he's going to be, you know, directing this producing. You're one of the key components of the creators of this documentary that's going to be made. And I was like, would you like to come aboard? Or what would you like to do first? We're like, would you like to do this one day? And if that one day worked out, we can go for the next, you know, the whole leg of the tour here.
So basically you had one test day.
Yeah.
To like prove yourself type deal?
Well, it was just...
Or is it just like
it was to see
scheduling?
How, it was to see how this team worked, you know? And, you know, that's... You know, at that point, we didn't know what the budget limitations or whatever, so we did it normally. And like how everyone knows in this film business, it comes down to budget. And it doesn't matter how good you are all. And that doesn't matter at your skill level at all. You can be the best freaking guy at every department, but if they don't have a budget for you, they're probably not going to get you, or you're going to lose a lot of money. So it's that weird...
Everything comes down to just money and the bottom line.
But everyone knows for damn sure that like this is one of those opportunities, of course, you know, that I would have loved to do.
Definitely, because just you, like what I was saying in the beginning of this whole episode is like, you love music, and on top of that, you specifically love the Beach Boys. Like, that is like, seriously,
I grew up
your
on
top,
the Beach Boys.
That's really, I don't want to rank it for you, but it is one of your top bands.
And you know, it's
like top, probably even 10 even.
It's the first time listening to the Beach Boys. I will regulate that to me and John Stamos on a Full House. That'd be the first time I ever heard the Beach Boys, because that was the first time it made sense to me.
And also,
that
we were young. That was our generation. Like, honestly, I think that our generation's connection to the Beach Boys was with Full House.
Yeah. So
that was like the Uncle Jesse's whole character, because he was like into music and all that, and he had that connection with the Beach Boys.
And so here we go. I signed up for it. I tried to readjust my schedule as best as I could, because again, I had a feature film to work on that I already signed up for.
And he had another project.
And I had other projects. So, like, for love of God, I wanted to do as much as I can on this thing without sabotaging my career, my personal career at this very point. You know, it's like, I do photography, I do filmmaking, I do in the convention tour and all that stuff. I tried to do as much as I could. But here we go. We're off. The first show we did was, I might be a little bit blank on this, but we're off and running on this schedule. And man, this thing was as dramatic of on and off as you can possibly get. First show, New York, Jones Beach. Never even heard of Jones Beach before. I was like, what? There's a beach in freaking New York? What the hell is that?
Tons of little beaches.
Yeah,
up there.
And so like, you know, off and running, leave to go up there at 5 o'clock and have a production meeting. have a production meeting. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to name names, so
don't name names.
For people who are in the production who are listening to this, don't feel offended if I did not name your name. This is all sort of just like,
it's to protect the innocent.
So I'm not really sure how to handle this, so I'll just tell from my perspective as best as I could. Jones Beach, went to a fancy hotel to do a production meeting, and what was really amazing, it's not even a big crew. It's like the five of us. Or maybe the four of us. No, one, two, three. Yeah, it's just the four of us.
Like, yeah,
it's
a documentary crew, guys. That's why I think this whole thing is, like, seriously so special, because, like, really, like, less than a handful of people on the whole planet Earth got to experience what you experienced this summer.
What's even so grand is during this production meeting, this first ever meet, it's like meeting the whole crew and a production meeting, and getting introductions, loading your gear, and all that stuff like that. It's like that day is sort of like, you sort of had to, we had like a runaround, not a runaround, but we had a pre-pro meeting of, they were describing what the Beach Boys were, like the producers, like
they're educating you about what you were about to film.
Like, at that moment, I just legitimately just realized that I am the person that's the most educated on the Beach Boys on this crew, for crying out. It was weird. It's like, we're shooting a documentary, no one knows about the Beach Boys. They're like, yeah, so they have this guy that's named Brian Wilson, and he's like this Mozart of music. And in my head, I'm like, I know this shit. I already know. This is amazing. Why am I the guy that knows? Getting educated about that. Like, yeah, so this is really important. And I'm like, I know this is really important. So it's those things of like, well, everyone's realizing this. It's like, you know, in my head, I'm like, come on. Like, you get that fanboy knowledge of like, how do you know? This is amazing.
But you knew who Brian Wilson was, but like out of the, I remember we were looking at the picture of the whole group, but I don't think you knew some of the other guys.
Well, yeah, so it's
like
hard.
You couldn't visualize like what they look like now.
Which is amazing. Yeah, it's hard when you see those beginning like, and end images, yeah, too. Like so that's even
like
a tough link.
Current day Beach Boys.
So it was off. So we're off and running on that, and we got educated what we're going to shoot, what the plan to shoot is. You know, that's basically the rundown. You know, this is basically, this first day was going to describe how we're going to do the rest of the tour, so to speak. And that was already pretty crazy. I mean, I'm just going to start jumping circles here. But yeah, we go to the venue. The venue is this awesome place on the beach. You know, a venue that's on the water. And, you know, you pose out different variations. Because I was telling you, Carolyn, about, like, oh, I'm filming the Beach Boys. And you're like, oh, my God, what if John Stamos is there? And I was like, there's no way John Stamos is going
to
be there.
That was, like, my first reaction to this whole thing. I was just like, John Stamos.
What if you meet John Stamos? Because, of course, everyone knows, if you listen to this radio show, that there's been several episodes just about John Stamos and his hair and everything like that.
And how awesome he is.
So, of course, there's no way of meeting John Stamos because he shouldn't be part of the reunion. Or I don't know. There's a big stuff about that. But it was pretty crazy, you know? Big venue, just thrown right into it, and you're already eating with, like, the crew and stuff like that. I was like, oh, this is just, like, a normal production. And lo and behold, the person during soundcheck that I see playing I Get Around and that whole the end of the first act playing drums is freaking John Stamos. I was like, what? This is so surreal. I was like, is that John Stamos playing drums? I was like, no way. Oh, my God. So I was like, Beach Boys, John Stamos, Jones Beach. This is like where am I at this point? Oh, man. So
you got drifted away into like euphoria or something for a brief moment.
It was literally, and also just like everything else, this whole entire summer, it's like it's basically you take the good with the bad. And it was one of those situations that we already learned, and what happens multiple times at every venue that we got to at that point is that everyone knows that we're shooting the documentary there, but you have to break in with the crew. They don't know who you are. And also you have to deal with the unions. So we could have, so our plan was to shoot the concert, but with dealing with unions, all we could do is shoot for 4 hours. Like literally we were just allowed to shoot for 4 hours. So it's like we can choose to shoot the concert or we choose to shoot like the fans. Because since it's a union state, we're literally going to be shut. Like we were going to be shut down, you know. We would still have all of our access, but we would not be allowed to film anything. So it was one of those, you know, it's one of those realities, man, of how everything happened. It's we would shoot there, we would shoot the interviews, you know, it would be cool shooting B-roll everywhere, but we wouldn't be allowed to shoot the concert. So that's the choices we made. But in a good sense, it's me, because that's the first time I ever experienced the Beach Boys.
And so did you get to like actually enjoy the concert though and sit back?
Yeah, that was what's interesting about that, is that we were able to actually like pre-pro the concert, and we were able to see that, and we were able to have full reign of where we can walk around the concert because we have the all access. We're shooting the documentary, and so I was like, I experienced my very first Beach Boys concert with unadulterated freedom to go wherever I wanted to. So I was able to walk to the back, hang out with John Stamos in the fucking production office, go all the way back to the mixing booth at free will. Go to the side, go to hang out. My very first Beach Boy concert of one of my favorite like most influential bands, and I was able just to be right behind the drums if I felt like it. You know, that was amazing for me, and I was like, whoa. And at this very moment, no other Beach Boy concert of the whole tour had as much that sticks out in my mind as that Jones Beach, New York one. Because I was like, first time hearing majority of these new songs, too. Because as much as I know of the Beach Boys, I've never seen or never heard their whole entire absolute complete collection. And so when I was listening to that, and I was like, and the crowd was super hot, you know, and I was like, wow, like this is if you're going to enjoy the Beach Boys, this is it right here, man.
And one thing that I remember
they're into it.
That you were telling me is that they played 51 songs every night, and that was a standard thing?
They played 51 songs every single night.
Now, was it the same songs in the same order, or did they mix it up a little bit?
I don't know. I mean, it looked like they played the same songs.
Okay.
Because that's the way it was structured.
That's a really, like, knowing 51 songs, I know that like, somebody could argue, like, oh, well, their songs are short or whatever, but still, either way, it's like 51 songs.
And what's amazing about watching the Beach Boys live...
Dang.
Watching the Beach Boys live and this show and all the shows is that they got these jams, these slow jams that are pretty like, you know, sometimes you see these older acts where they have the fast songs that everyone loves. And then you have the slow songs that people are like, OK, you know, the ballads. But what's amazing about watching the Beach Boys live is you got these rocking songs. Because they come from the doo-wop ages. They come from those band, the surf times. And those songs were... the harmonies. And those songs are freaking hopping. Their songs were hopping. But when they do the breakdown, the slower jams, the slower, the more intricate songs, those things are so smartly placed together. Like that you're just amazed at the song craftsmanship and the harmonies. So this was just a beautiful concert to be at. This was a beautiful thing. And to realize, and also for that Jones Beach one, for that to be special was pretty much a merger of all Beach Boys. Because, you know, when you have the Mike Love era afterwards, you have John Stamos with that. And then before that, you have with the Brian Wilson. So in this show, you had all of that. That was super important. You had John Stamos open it up, play drums. You still had Brian Wilson there doing that. It was such a vicious combination, you know? And it was amazing. My first run-in with any of the Beach Boys was during the first intermission, because they have an intermission. I went back there, and then all of a sudden I started, you know, I stand around looking for the rest of my crew, and I stood there and I looked around in a circle. I was like, holy crap, I'm like in the meet and greet area. How do I like the backstage meet and greet area where they all hang out? And I turn around, I'm like, holy crap, I'm surrounded by all the Beach Boys. You know, I look around, I'm like, whoa, what? You know, in my head, and I turned to my other coworker. I was like, dude, this is so surreal. I just basically just ran into like Al Jardine. Like literally, I almost bumped into Al Jardine. One of many, many bump-ins, or here's Bruce. You know, it's like, holy crap. I was like, this is weird, but this is amazing at the same time.
So how was the, I guess the concert attendees, the fans, it ranged all ages.
Yeah, it ranged all ages and they rocked out. Like, because...
So do you think it's, like, a generational thing also? Because, like, I feel like they span, like, seriously, like, 100 years. Because well, it's, like, it's, you have the older crowd.
It's definitely, like, a generational thing. But if you sense the real influence of the Beach Boys is massive. Weezer, Rooney.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Everyone, when it comes down to, like, even the musician, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, man. Right down to one of my favorite bands. Influence big time Beach Boys. And for me to be there to think like has John Frusciante or have they ever like just hung out with the Beach Boys and Brian Wilson, you know what I mean? Have they been there with them?
I don't know.
I have done that. That's weird.
Yeah,
that's amazing to think that, you know, like, and just to see them just hang out with them while they're mic checking, and for them to know my name throughout this tour, and then to know that for the American tour was and the Canadian tour was amazing to see that.
So from
and to know that they can perform is another thing.
Yeah.
To not just because there's always been this proprietor of when you get older you get worse, and in my head I don't believe that. Believe like me personally, I'll be kicking until my legs are broken, my arms until I'm freaking just like a mush. There's something in my head that will trigger me just to keep on going, I hope. And if not, I will just embrace insanity, you know?
Well, from what you told me, it seems like they were still totally kicking. And like
they were!
And like, seriously, like...
Crowd was up!
Even like their new songs like sound good. So great. Like, it sounds better than anybody that's in like their 20s or 30s, you know?
That's what makes it so sad.
For the state of music, yeah. Like, well, not even sad. It makes it awesome for the Beach Boys, but it's sad for, like, this upcoming generation because, like, all these bands nowadays, like, are never going to be as great as the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
Like, they're, like, the end of the generation. Like, to me, it's, like, I mean, they're still, like, you know, around, but at the same time, you know, like I said in the beginning of this show, it's, like, well, recently they just, you know, denounced the full formation that they just had this summer, but, like, you know, just... To even hear about that is kind of sad, too, because it's like, man, you just know that music's, like, it's like a piece of music died, really. I mean...
It literally is.
But, like, it also, like, at the same time, like, elevates the Beach Boys, but at the same time, just music in general is so, like, horrible. But then also you have bands like Rooney, which, in my opinion, is, like, an amazing band, but then they also do have, like, throwback to the Beach Boys. But, I mean, it is a good acknowledgement that they're still around. Like, there are, like, hopefully, I just hope that one band that, like, will be coming out in the next few years, like, these teenagers that are growing up now, like, these garage band guys, like, will just come back and be influenced by people like the Beach Boys or, like, Red Hot Chili Peppers and stuff and, like, actually create new music that is good music that's based on roots.
Yeah.
So we just have to look forward to that band, whoever they may be, to, like, pop up and... you know, take over the world.
I mean, when you think about the influence of the Beach Boys, you know, at this point, it's like when I was talking to everyone in the Beach Boys, I was thinking in my head, I was like, there is no Beatles without these guys. You know, there is like the quality of music at that time. There is, you know, there is no Red Hot Chili Pepper. There is no, you know, that sound would not be there. That's, you know, it's a tough thing to realize that. Yeah. It's tough when you you know you it's weird, and you know I know you use the word weird a lot, but like it's weird and surreal is what I felt like a lot of times on this tour.
Well, because definitely what I mean? You like just wake up and look at the position you're in. You're like you said, I'm surrounded by Beach Boys, like physically in your presence.
And what's even crazy is like, you know, when you're in backstage with the Beach
Boys,
and
they know your name too.
Yeah, I mean, I doubt they remember my name now, but it's like,
but at least they knew it at one point.
Not only that, but then me having a run-in with John Stamos was amazing. I'm not gonna lie, I don't even know if I told the story of this, but I probably told the story. I'm there in the production office. Every tour has a production office, and that's also where we set up our gear to be staged. And I guess from what I realize now, it was a weird triangle of things that were happening. John Stamos most likely was in the production office, from what I hear, trying to get tickets for somebody, right, to get them into the show.
Yeah.
And so while I was loading there. In my head, while I was just loading, getting ready, I was trying to figure, you know, to put a fanboy in me. I was trying to think of any way for me to stay in that office to have some sort of interaction with John Stamos. Of course, I missed part of the concert while doing this, or two songs. But, like, again, the coworkers and I were just like, oh, who's John Stamos? You know, or How can they not know? Well, one was a little younger. You know,
still,
outside of that, the other one,
Stamos is still pretty prominent.
Yeah, and that's really important. But at the same, I was in there, and I was just like, there must be some way I can interact with John Stamos. Like, there was literally a time where it was just me and John Stamos in that room, and I was like,
you're just like, I'm in a room with John.
I'm in a room with John Stamos. I know that's amazing because we talked about it. I was like, there has to be some sort of way. You know, the first thing I did as soon as I texted you guys, I was like, I'm in the same room with John Stamos. I'm just hanging out with John Stamos right now. But what's really funny is I didn't ask the first question. He asked the first question. I was checking on my batteries, you know, and I was just standing there. And he turned around, and he had, like, still, like, hipster glasses on, which is crazy. He turned around from this old Mac computer, or the MacBook computer that he was. He's like, is this your chair? Is this your chair? I was like, no, John, that's cool. It's just, yeah, you're good. And then he turned back around. That was the first interaction. Is this your chair? I was like, no, it's your chair, John. It's fine, man. It's fine.
I think it's funny how, like, last summer you got to meet Dean Cain and work with Dean Cain.
Was that last summer?
Yeah, I believe so. And you got to...
2 summers ago.
No.
That's all right.
Summers ago.
Well, I did. It's, yeah, Dean Cain.
You got to basically literally work directly with Dean Cain and talk to Dean Cain about boobs. And now, this past summer, you get to, like, interact with John Stamos.
Yeah.
But, like, I just think it's awesome because those, like, for me, I'm jealous on that because, like, we all know, and it's been clear on this radio show, that, like, those guys are in, like, my top list of guys.
Yeah.
And, like, I think that that's pretty awesome, though, that you actually got to meet them in person. So do they live up to the hype? That's all I want to know.
Well, and that only begins, I'm not even sure.
From a female perspective.
Who, John Stamos, does he live up the hype?
Yeah.
I mean, another thing.
He's a pretty cool guy or what?
But see, here's the interesting thing, and it's funny that you bring up the Dean Cain thing. The interesting fact of the people that he was contacting to get tickets to come in
mm-hmm.
was a person that I worked with on that Dean Cain movie.
Oh, there's the connection. See that right there.
Triangle
effect of connections. And I think that that's amazing too.
That was such a small world.
It is such a small world.
He was getting tickets for my friend my friend Stephanie that comes in that works in production as well because he was shooting a movie with them. You know, so
he was working on Broadway play.
But
he
was working on a movie with her. That's why they got those tickets. And John was like, hey, you should come out to the Beach Boys show I'm playing. That's who he was emailing and making sure that he got tickets for. So when I turned my back from being on the side of the stage one time, I turned my back and it was Stephanie. And I was like, what are you doing here? And she was like, I saw you post on Facebook that you're going to be at this show. And I was like, yeah, that's amazing. He's like, she was like, I'm working with John Stamos. He was like, you should have tickets and come to the show. I was like, oh, I should go. And I was like, wait a minute. Did she go to see John Stamos or did she go to see me? Because this would be crazy.
That's like worlds colliding right there.
It was.
It is small world.
So
right
in my head, I was like, oh, now I have an in to talk to John Stamos. And then freaking Beach Boys are rocking out behind me. Wow. And then it's I'm meeting a friend from a movie with Dean Cain. And then I'm working with this with crew that first work. I was like, wow. And the crowd is rocking right now. I was like, this is so surreal, man.
That's amazing. So that was the New York concert. Now, there was like 3 more weeks of this tour, right? So what happened? Well, like, can you tell us?
The drama even continues on that night.
Oh, yeah?
So because they're going after that right to Norfolk, right? To that Norfolk, Virginia Beach area to do a show.
Like the next day or how much? How are we on the timeline here?
I think maybe it was a day or then they'll come back or something like that. And then there was this. And then, of course, my producer, which is a documentary, so we got film as much as we can. So there's all this negotiations of like, because I was supposed, so the team was already in there. So I was like, all right, we're supposed to fly out and then we're just supposed to hang out and to wait till they come back from that show in Phoenix or Utah and wait for them to go back to Provo, Utah and film that show. And then everyone was... Then we're like, well, they're gonna be in Virginia Beach, and we're all close to Virginia Beach. And then I forget what it was. All of a sudden, I get pulled to a corner, but in front of the production office, they're like, so what are you doing in 2 days, Joe? And I was like, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where it's like, you might have something booked, you know, because I have to have booked or have stuff booked around so I don't have work. I was like, I don't want to tell people I can't do it, but let me see if I can squeeze in that, you know? You know, it's that weird of like, I want to do it so bad, but I don't want to fuck over other people. And that's the one thing like I really try not to do in my business is fuck over other people. I've said that I can do something, you know, not do it. And it breaks my heart to not do something after I've said I've done something. But luckily I was free, you know. And so they pulled me over and like, hey, you're the one closest to Virginia Beach. What would you think of because we're trying to get a shot of the Beach Boys landing and then leaving, and we can have part of our crew go to Utah and film them land, and you can film them going on, and you'll just fly with them by yourself on the plane, on the private jet. And in my head, I'm like, holy shit! Now I'm going to be on their fucking private plane. I'm gonna hang out with them by themselves. I was like,
in the
this
air,
in
the middle
air?
Of the air.
I was like, this is freaking crazy, man. So of course, after I thought about it for a second, I was like, yeah, I'm good. Make it happen. And so you go through this. It's just like Entourage. That's the only way. It's like, yes, no. Is it going to happen? I don't know. So, like, I already agreed to it. And then by the end of the day, by the end of that, so I was like, oh, man, holy crap. I'm all pumped. I'm like, in my head, I was like, crap, I got to get to know all these people. You know, so you got to, like, you don't want to be a fool when you're
up
there.
You got to be, like, on.
You got to be on. And, of course, me, I'm like, give me a camera. You know, if I'm not, well, give me a camera and I'm confident. You know what I mean? But if I'm not holding this camera, I might have a little iffiness about it. Like, oh, can I do it? But once you give me a fucking camera in my hand,
you're
it's like
equipped.
A weapon. Yeah, I'm equipped, sir. And it's like I have a weapon. If anyone's seen the way I equip myself with my gear, it's literally like I'm a freaking sniper.
Straight up.
It's like I have it situated, so it's like I'm pulling out a gun out of my holster. That's how awesome it is. And that's pretty much how I rocked this documentary, is that I had a gun in my holster
exactly.
And it's my camera. Like, I had remember I had that strap that I used?
Yeah.
The quick draw.
Quick draw McGraw.
I had that. And that's what I used.
You just, like, whip out the strap and, like basically jump the camera from your side, like, to right in front of your face, like, trigger ready.
Yeah. So I was already in my head, and in my head I was like, crap, so now I gotta get mentally ready for this. And at that same time, my friend Stephanie was talking to John Stamos, and I was like, oh man, we should talk to John Stamos somehow. So I walked past him, like, in that group. I was like, oh, good job, John. And then he took a second to still talk, and then he turned around like, oh, thanks, dude. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. And then not only that, but so while that rest of the show was going on, I was like, I went to my coworker. I was like, let's hang out on that side of the stage, because that's where John Stamos is hanging out. So we just stayed on the side that John Stamos was hanging out at, and the whole time. And then my coworker was like, oh, it's no big deal. I'll go talk to John Stamos, you know. So like he like came up and walked up to him and started just shooting stuff. You know what I mean? It's like started shooting questions. And I'm not gonna use this against him. But I immediately, when I was watching that, I was thinking, like, I don't know how much more John can take, because he's really just going to start questioning him. Like, hey, yo, so what do you do here? Or what do you do now? And I can see John at the end of it just sort of be like, oh, I got to go. He did those things.
He jumped out.
Yeah, he did those moments. I'm like, oh, I got to go. Oh, shoot, let me see. Oh, no, they're about to perform. You know, he did moments like that. And I was like, oh, I don't want that to be me.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the last thing I want to be like, oh, I'm going to duck out of this fanboy celebrity guy. I don't know. You know what I mean? I don't want that. If anyone knows me, I really wanted, like, sounds weird, but I want to have a working, I want to have, like, a real...
real relationship and not just, like, quizzing them.
I don't want to be a civilian.
Fanny.
I don't want to look like a civilian.
Yeah,
that's, maybe that's my ego, but maybe that's just how it all happens.
Well, it's kind of, like, understandable a little bit, because I'm not by any means saying that we're celebrities or of John Stamos level at this moment, but I know from, like, talking to some people, sometimes, like, people just keep grilling, you know, and talking to you, and...
That's what I felt
like
he was...
It's almost like you have a moment, and you can connect for a brief moment, and if things don't work out after that, you end up just being, like, a hanger-on and, like, just talking to somebody all up in their face, like, and there's no connection. It ends up being, like, some type of interview or something.
Yeah. So, fast forward, end of the show. It was an awesome show. So, we're packing up, and we're leaving. We got all of our gear. And I'm outside near in the parking lot, the loadout section, and I'm there on the ground putting all my stuff in my camera case. And then John Stamos comes walking out to this truck, right? To the truck, basically like one car spot away from me. And I look up at him, and then he looks down at me, and then there's eye contact, and I do like a salute, like my usually, see you later, John. And he salutes right back at me and points. I was like, what the hell is going on, dude?
You guys are saluting each other.
I was like, this is weird. This is amazing.
Did you ever feel like the movie Almost Famous during
this
any part of
this? This is literally what it was. This whole thing was Almost Famous. That's what it was, is Almost Famous. You know, that's like what it, like in my head, like I was like, this is like Almost Famous, dude. And of course, the other guys, only the producer of this was the only person who's seen Almost Famous several, and the other guys have not. And I was like, oh my God, guys, you are killing me. But during the course of this tour, we freaking watched Almost Famous while doing the 20-hour drives.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So what did they think about it afterwards? Were they like, yeah, man, this is Almost Famous?
I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I register differently with a lot of... I register movies because I try to take things emotionally. And, you know, maybe some people do, but hopefully they enjoyed it. I didn't really get a chance to ask them.
So then where are we now on the tour?
Right now on the tour... So I'm still under the impression of like, oh man, I'm going to go with them by myself.
Yeah, on the plane.
On the plane.
Private plane in the air with the Beach Boys.
So what actually ends up happening is that in the course of 3 days, because this is happening at the beginning of July at this point, because we're trying to film the big, because you know, Beach Boys always do a big 4th of July show. You know what I mean?
Definitely.
That's the first time I missed them was a 4th of July show up in Atlantic City. But that wasn't the full Brian Wilson original band. But that did have John Stamos attached to it. So what happened with that was all of a sudden, they hear more about the documentary. Our awesome producer pitches it to them more. And then we're getting more access. So what happens instead of me, now it's the whole crew that's going on this Beach Boys private jet. And that itself was like, holy crap, now we're all doing it. We're all on this thing together.
So how was that?
I'll jump ahead of it, and I'll say this was the epitome. There's one moment that really epitomized what this whole tour was for me, because now it's work. The fanboy part is gone. You know, it's not gone. It's hardcore.
It's just
still
put,
there.
It's just put aside it's, though. You can't put now, that ahead of the work.
But now it's not a one shot. It's like now we're back into it. So we all drive. We all drive, our producer flies back from LA or Colorado, and then we all go down to Norfolk area and we fly. We go and meet up with them at their plane. And we're there before them. So we can get them coming in, so we get that experience of like, holy crap, it's the plane and all that stuff. And you guys can see all the images of this on my Astray J Instagram. I posted a lot of stuff in there. Probably I'll post some images down there on the Go Astray Tumblr. But while seeing that, everyone's loading in. We see the band all load in. We're shooting a B-roll. And then it's time. You know, it's the first time I'm on a private jet, too. You know, and they're all... This is all... You know, usually it's like 200 seats. All like coach or something like... Majority coach. But these are like 200 seats that are now like 50 seats all first class. So again, now it's me first class. First time ever. So, of course, we're about to fly. We're all getting drinks and stuff like that. I got, like, a ginger ale.
It's like
whatever.
You can have anything you would ever want to drink, and then you choose the ginger.
And all the main event of the band.
Does it have a cherry in it?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. You know, and, like, there's so many times I was just, like, so I'm there shooting B-roll, so now I'm, like, up close and personal with them, and Brian Wilson is just, like, sleeping, and they're all in the front section, and some band members want to be in the back so it's less noise. So it's, like, that spread outness of it. And then, of course... of course, I have a drink in my hand, not in my hand, but, like, in, I don't know where I had it, but we're on liftoff, and we need to shoot shots of, like, everyone flying up, right? Or not everyone flying up, but the ground and the plane lifting up, and trying to shoot B-roll of all that. So, of course what happens is that, like, as soon as it's time for liftoff, and I go to grab my camera, and then at the same time, and when I swing... to turn to shoot to the outside, right? I go and I knock over my full drink, and all the liquid just goes all in my pants. So my whole pants is drenched with ginger ale, and I'm all like, shit. And then I was like, well, I had to sort of like still shoot outside. And then the tour manager of the Beach Boys turns to me and I'm like, oh, that's a good way to start the show, dude. I was like, I know, it sucks. So I'm like, I can't like... Because I'm supposed to get up after this and start shooting more. And I'm like, in my head, I was like, oh, man, I don't want to be walking around Beach Boys and my pants is all wet and shit like that.
Was it like, looked like it peed yourself or it was looked it like a spill?
No, it looked like it looked horrible. It looked
You're
like
I just basically pissed my
This
pants.
Is a full entire, it wasn't even like, you know how like usually in the, usually, because also you get sandwiches and stuff, like full, big, nice sandwiches on this plane.
Oh, wow.
So, and they're all lined up on a table. Like, there was catering
like it was
on there.
It was presented to
you. Yeah, it's catering on there. And this is usually like the plane that like NBA player, like real big ups, like Bono or something would use.
Yeah.
So it was a nice plane. And then at that point, I was like, this is vicious. this is vicious. It was like a real cup. Usually in a plane you get like a half cup.
Yeah, or like not like a Dixie cup.
A Dixie cup. This was a freaking full cup that I didn't even drink out of. I was gonna cherish that shit. And I was just like, God, I was like, damn it, man. I was like, why does this have to happen? So I was like, crap, I gotta dry it off. So I'm like trying to like pat it down as best as I can.
Yeah.
Hiding it as best as I can. And the next step was us to shoot interviews inside the plane, of all like as many band members as we could. We got Bruce. We got as many as we can. It was
so
like
how many band members are there in this tour?
In this tour, you have the whole band, like that part of the band, and then you have the merging of the backing band of both the original the Beach Boys and Bruce Wilson's band. So there was a lot. There's probably 20 people on that stage.
Oh wow!
So it was a lot, which is pretty quite amazing. And that to me was like, I didn't even know that was gonna be happen. Let me see if I can increase. But like that to me was pretty cool.
How many people like traveled? Like okay, so there's 20 musicians, let's say. How many other people are around?
You have the VIP. You have the tour manager. You have all the people that are running it. I mean, all those guys are there too.
So is there probably like
I don't want to name names because I feel weird.
I'm not asking you to name names. I'm asking how many people are touring overall. So you have 20 people that are musicians. About the extra crew and all that?
Yeah. So
it's a big production is what I'm getting at, right?
I mean, you might have
like maybe 40?
What's amazing? Yeah, probably around 40.
Okay. That's what I'm asking for, not names.
Yeah. it's maybe a little bit. I'm not sure. Less, maybe some
like
less, 35. Because you have crew, and then you have band, and then you have band, and then you have VIP, and that was only on the, and like, I actually probably didn't even know all of them, because they all did different buses, we all drove, yeah. Once we got down on the ground, like, there were several buses out there, and then we had our own car that we would follow them with, and that's pretty crazy, you know what I mean? So at that point, we land in Provo, Utah. And that's on the 4th of July. And that's, like, for that to be the second, Beach Boys show was already massive.
Okay, so
because
you did
that
Virginia
was,
Beach, and then you do Provo, Utah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to see how this will. But that itself was another situation of we can't film the show. But then again, here I am at this massive venue. Like, massive! This venue just tripled. I mean, it's the official Provo, Utah, like, I hope that's the place that it's called. Provo, it's the official Provo, Utah 4th of July. Nothing else happens in this town, apparently, except you have this massive show in this massive football stadium with who's opening up, and that's going to go to all the military people, 135 military bases around the world and probably on TV, I'm just there. I'm just there, full access again,
and working the show,
and work, or not even. We're not allowed to film the show this part because they're being filmed.
So
but
this,
we had to do an interview.
This was another one where you did get to enjoy the concert, though.
Not even that. I didn't really get to. I sort of did, but I enjoyed it as a free spirit.
Yeah.
Again, a massive venue. So the first thing we did, which started a bigger ritual, was a big band ritual that the film crew that we did was we abducted all their Clif bars, which became a thing that we constantly did at every venue. I hope none of the bands were fans of Clif bars, but it was our survival on the crew on
so
the
basically
on
the, fil- the film crew survived on the Clif bars.
Yes, we took those Clif bars, sir. if they had Clif bars, we took them all, because that's like gold on tour. So at that point, massive. And the last year's, who opened up for them? The last year's winner of American Idol.
Oh, wow.
So it's, and like, I'm watching them soundcheck, and I'm like, who is that guy? And they're like, oh, yeah, that's the American Idol winner. I was like, really? What? You know, and sound, you know, sound quality was good. Everything was good about that. But it was another situation of you take the good with the bad. And at that, and during that show, that is when we had gear malfunction. So it was that situation of we're losing that first, not second day, and we sort of lost our confidence. Our producer, you know, stuff was not working how it was. We're losing sun, and we're not allowed to shoot the venue, and we're dealing with noise issues. So it was a mixture of that. It's amazing, but it's hard, you know, yeah. Because you want to do the job the best you can, but you can't, because for one thing, if you're trying to record audio in a documentary, we want that good audio, and you can't if there's a freaking dance party happening next to you, or if there's cops all around and there's millions of people, you know what I mean? So it literally is.
You weren't in a secured environment there,
and we're never going to be in a secured environment. So we're out there trying to shoot interviews with fans about the Beach Boys. And, you know, it's not happening because you want that clean audio and it's also just chaos. But it was a situation where, you know, that was the first time I drove in vans with the Beach Boys to the venue. We hung out with Mike Love in the another situation. What was amazing is because we hung out at the hotel because we had to get our gear, and our only ride back to the venue was the vans that the Beach Boys took. And what we did, so.
You mean like a bus or a van?
We're talking about like vans.
Like one of those white vans?
Yeah, like literally four of those white vans.
Okay.
Literally four of those white vans. So my coworker and I got our gear that we were supposed to get, that we were trying to retrieve, and we brought it back, and we're bringing it back. And then we're like, well, the only vans we have are, you know, we're with the Beach Boys, we're documenting them, so I guess we go with them. And they're like, all right, you go with them. So we're in the van with like Mike Love. He gets, you know, he's all chilling out there. You know, they're getting accustomed to us. But what's even more surreal about this particular trip is when we get out of the van and all the we're literally, because we all have to go to the same location. Like, we all have to go to like the dressing room area. So we're like, all right, we're just going to walk with you because we're all going to the same place. What did I not realize is that this is like the celebrity walk that we're all taking. It's like this massive entourage of Beach Boys and crew. And then what we pass by is like the, you know, like whenever we wait for bands, like outside the venue, and they have like the guardrail.
Yeah.
This was the line I was walking with the Beach Boys on that, and there's this massive amounts of people waiting for the Beach Boys to pass by, and here I am like walking next to Mike Love and Brian Wilson to like go there, and all the fans are like, oh my god, and I'm like looking at that, I was like, oh, this is how it feels, dude.
That's how it feels to be on the other side of the barrier.
Yeah, and we have police escorts with us, and I'm just like, we're all just rolling deep, and I'm not gonna lie to you, I sort of like. I walked pretty hard on that time. I was like, yeah, what's up?
That's how I feel when I walk into New York Comic Con and I already have my, like, pass, my all-access pass type deal.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone else been in line for, like, hours just to get in, like, one of the first people to get into New York Comic Con and stuff. And we just, like, roll right in.
So that,
I don't have to wait in line.
So that was the experience of that show. I'll probably just break this down now so it doesn't get too long to experience... key moments I had to each show, but that for that Provo one was the one I'm gonna remember the most. Was walking with the Beach Boys through the autograph area and then eating lunch with them, or eating whatever the meal.
Yeah.
So that was what I'm gonna take away from it. Also the ritual of taking all the Clif Bars began there. There's more stuff in Utah, but we'll jump to.
We shouldn't hurry it up. I mean, if this has to go on to next week. We can.
I mean, I guess we can.
So, like, let's just say, what was your next destination? Just to tease,
we'll run it out here. We'll run it out for the amount of time I've placed on here.
Okay.
But one thing, the next place. So that was interesting. And what's even interesting is that we stay at the same place as the what's it called, the band. We're the same hotel. As the band.
Okay, and so, was it a fancy, nice hotel, or?
These are usually like. This one was like the Hilton, I believe it's Hilton. I guess that can be nice.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, but it's like when you walk.
It's not like Days Inn, but Days Inn is still good. if you need a good hotel for, like, not paying Hilton prices.
Yeah. But what's interesting is when you are at the same hotel and you do see the band and you see and you're with the band, you do sort of experience, like, the people who come up to them and be like, oh, I love your music. You know, and we're trying to film those moments. Those are the moments you
exactly.
want to get.
And that's probably, like, super genuine, too, because those people are having their moment, and they might only get, like, whatever, that 1 or 2 minutes with the Beach Boy to tell them how much they appreciate the music.
Yeah.
So you're capturing all of those moments.
Yeah, so I'm capturing all those moments, and it's really, you know, it's really surreal to see that, too. It really is almost famous. That's how I broke it down.
But no one jumped from, like, the top of a roof into a pool and said, I'm a golden god.
No one... Well, maybe a little bit later.
Okay.
That's maybe one of those situations. So at that point, but at the same time, it's such a, we're sort of now disappointed because our gear is not happening the way we want it to work. And, you know, it's like when you can't trust your gear, you sort of got to you got to troubleshoot and try to fix that. So we did have that back and forth. And the sad point is this is 4th of July. And to tell you the truth, I didn't really see fireworks. I heard fireworks, but...
What happened with that? How come you didn't see any?
Well, because at this point, we're trying to film, and we're like, well, now instead of enjoying fireworks, we're like dreading fireworks.
Yeah.
Because, and also, this is supposed to be the biggest fireworks show in America. And like,
oh, wow.
And we're like, oh, we got 15 minutes. Is there any way we can delay them? This is what happens at the venues. So, because we want to try to shoot interviews beforehand, but remember, whenever you walk into a show, they're playing music, and we mm-hmm. can't use any of that music when we walk in. So we got to shoot
copyright yeah. issues. You can't have it on in the background.
Yeah, exactly. So we're trying to interview the VIPs that Beach Boys has and see what they, you know, the stories that they have to tell about the Beach Boys and stuff like that. But we can only do that for a certain amount of time, and then they open the doors, and then the music starts, and we can't. Tell them to stop. We've multiple times tried to tell them to stop, but they can only do it for so long.
So can you ever make like a makeshift like green room in the back and like, oh,
we tried.
Insulate it?
We tried. We've tried wholeheartedly. I mean the next venue after Provo, was to might be Phoenix.
Phoenix, Arizona.
Yeah, I believe that's what it was. First time going there, and I don't know how long of a drive it was, but it was probably like a 20-hour drive or 16-hour drive.
Oh
my gosh. Where we would drive through the Grand Canyon, and then at the same time, you know, we're all trying to get to know each other. We're just in a Tahoe or a massive truck, you know, and we're trying to like stop on the side of the road to shoot cool B-roll and stuff like that, and we stopped by Bryce Canyon. That was again a pretty amazing place. It's like one of those places. That when the light, it's one of those canyon areas,
yeah,
just like the Grand Canyon.
I've heard it's very beautiful.
But when the light hits it, like there's only a certain set, and this is like red rocks around you and stuff like that. Stuff that looks like cities, you know what I mean?
Basically, like a formation of rocks that's made by God.
Yeah, and when you're there, you're looking at it.
Mother Nature.
So so at that point, you know, we've probably riding for like probably like 8 hours. You know, and I'm like, me, I want to, you know, I'm trying to make the crew feel good. And like, I'm like, I'll drive for as long as you want, you know, which probably might have been not a good reason because after this whole documentary, it agitated my back again with all this driving and that situating. That might
have a lot of sitting if you're driving for like 24 hours,
so much,
16 hours. And
so
all that.
Much. And also there's this idea of like there's four different people in there. And I'll preface this again. You know, I want to play music. I was the only one who brought fucking tons of music, apparently. I was just like burning massive data CDs with all these songs. But like when I start playing a song, you know, people are not going to like a song, or they will. This is like just tour diaries now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, oh, I don't know what song they're going to like. And, you know, so I'm trying to play the gentlest stuff that people will sort of like. That's not the Beach Boys, because you can't just be surrounded by that at all times.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I'm just going to play, like, She and Him and Ward and just, like, make sure something, you know, I was like, make sure something that people won't be offended by and stuff like that. So we're driving, right? Go to Bryce Canyon, and we stop by there, and, like, the only time, that's the most beautiful is, like, during the, like, magic hour time, because that's when, like, it's orange, and that's when, like, you know, the lights will hit it at a certain point. So now I'm like, oh shit, we gotta better make it. You know, we're like trying to like, it's like, yeah. Should we hit the Grand Canyon or should we hit Bryce Canyon? So it's like we have those things. Because once you get to the darkness of Grand Canyon or that area, it's just nothing.
Hole. It's just a nothing. Giant hole.
Yeah, giant hole of nothing.
Black.
So like, well, this is all we're gonna be able to get. It's the middle of nowhere. Let's go to it. So we went over to go over there, and we're all there for like 45 minutes until the sun goes down, posing with Beach Boys. And you know, it's one of those moments where it's like, wow, these are those crucial sitting moments. You know what I mean? Of just like you reflect, and then you have to hop back on a car, and you're out there. And it's amazing because then we stop by like some roadside place, you know what I mean? That like was
like a diner.
No, more literally like a cabin food thing.
Cabin food thing.
Not cabin food, but it had like the apparently they this is where a lot of film places stop by and they make food. Okay. And what I'd grab from that
was it like a B&B but like a cabin?
No, not a B&B, but it was a restaurant. It was like a side, you know, like roadside restaurant.
Okay, a roadside restaurant.
You know, basically in the area of now the Grand Canyon. I'm looking at the map and I'm like, all right, so we're gonna hit the Grand Canyon here, but we're not gonna see shit. It's gonna be black.
Yeah.
Which is even more scarier knowing there's a big black, like a big black hole to your right.
Yeah.
But what's amazing out of that is like, so it's the restaurant's run by a mom and pop place, and they're really proud of their food. But all I get out of my producers or everyone was just like, they're boasting like, yeah, we're the best food like in town. And then we're all like, afterwards, like it didn't feel that, it didn't taste that great.
What did you eat? What was the menu?
I really actually forget what I ate.
Must not have been memorable.
No, I got barbecue.
Like
I got barbecue.
Was it good?
No, it wasn't as good as.
Or was it average?
It was a little below average.
See, then why? Yeah, why are you going around boasting like your food's all great?
Well, maybe they haven't been to Texas or what. But
yeah, I know. Really.
But that's about, when I was eating, I was like, oh, this is probably gonna be some good. I want to try the barbecue. This is gonna be some good barbecue. You know, it was standard. You know, they put the sauce on top of it and they did that stuff. You know, it was.
It probably is the best for that area though, if that's what they're talking about.
So now at this point we're driving. We're driving in the middle of nowhere. And what's amazing, and what's really amazing, is when you're driving in like Arizona or any one of those areas where it's just a straight line, you know what I mean? Where it's just like an absolute straight line.
Yeah.
That 5 miles down the line, you can see another car. So you're going in a straight line at nighttime. You're driving forward, and then 5 miles down the line, you can see another car drive forward, and you're like, "Holy crap!" And so it becomes this big event of when we're actually gonna connect. You know what I mean? Because it's just like you just see a dot, and next to you, you see nothing, but then the moon. Because
also those streets are not lit.
All
you have is your headlights.
All you have is your headlights.
Yeah.
So at this point, so that's another thing. But this also has an interesting story of like, so we're all still bonding, right? And then I look at my producer as this hardcore. He has like a Brooklyn accent. Hardcore Brooklyn dude. You know what I mean? Like, yo,
like
what's
Jimmy or like Bugs Bunny?
Like maybe like
or who else, whoever.
I don't know, like Beastie Boys or something like that.
Beastie Boys. Okay.
Brooklyn, you know, it's like that, you know?
Brooklyn.
You like the Beach Boys, you don't fuck with us, you know, stuff like that. It's like that. So yeah, I think of it. So at this point, you know, it's car rotation. I'm sitting in the back of the car, right? You know, I'm sitting in the back. He took it amongst himself to lay down. You know, he has that space to lay down next to me.
How often do you actually pull over and like stretch and switch around like who's driving?
I don't know, man.
Sounds like, your back was like really messed up.
I would probably do 8-hour stretches. I'll do 8-hour drives. Literally,
oh,
I'll just drive for 8 hours. And at that point,
it's a full day of work. Right
and I'm
there.
Just like, well, because at that time I get to think about it, you know, follow the GPS, put on, you know, stuff like that. But so this is nighttime, right? We don't see anything on our sides. It's a pitch black. Raconteurs are playing because that's the music I had at that time. Probably like 4 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the morning driving Arizona.
Goodness.
You know, the producer's on the side, producer director is on the, like, next to me, laying down, like, comfortably. Could perfectly fit two sides, like, on his side, right? I'm not gonna sugarcoat this at all. All right, it's pitch black. Music is calmly playing. Passenger seat is asleep. I'm in the back. I'm right behind the driver's side, just like, you know, chilling. I can't really sleep for some reason. Driver's awake, of course. And then, you know, it's a good quiet moment. And what literally happens at that moment is the producer freaking farts so loud.
Oh my gosh.
He farts so loud.
I felt that one coming.
So what happened? So it's like, it's a horrible stench. But he's sleeping, right?
He farted in his sleep?
He farts in his sleep.
I mean, no, like, wait. In defense of this, it could have happened to anybody.
Hold on. That's not the end of the story. So I think this is some hardcore guy farts in his sleep. And then, like, I'm like dying. He's still sleeping. And then the other cohort is driving. Like, he is basically, like, he has sort of like a quick fuse. He has like a temper a little bit. Then he's like, damn it. It like opens up all the windows. And what it sounds like when you open up all the windows, going 80 miles per hour, driving in the middle of nowhere, it sounds like fucking someone opened up like the door of the plane. And it goes, like that. And at that moment,
that's when he woke up.
That moment, Mark wakes up and goes like, oh, sorry. Well,
I guess you can beat
whatever,
that out.
Whatever. I didn't say his last name. There's many Marks in this world. But he goes like, literally like we're about to craft. And he grabs me. He's like, what's going on? And then that moment, I can't stop laughing. I was like, gonna die, because he's like, he's gonna die. He's like, oh my god, stop.
But I know that moment, because like, you can be like sleeping, and then all of a sudden, because you don't know where you are. First of all, you're traveling with the Beach Boys. You have no idea where you're probably even going to. And then you hear this giant noise, and you think that you probably got in like a car crash or something.
That's so hilarious.
And also, you're like halfway delusional from driving for all those hours.
But like, at the same time, the coworker was like pissed. He's like, you can't do that shit. Don't do that shit here, man. I can't stand that. I can't believe he did. Like, he was like legitimately pissed. So he's pissed. And then the producer's grabbing me for help. And then the other guy wakes up.
So you told him what he did and why the windows went down.
I was like, well, he would eventually find out. Like, and then the other guy in the passenger seat that was sleeping, he like wakes up. He's like, "What's going on?" Like, he thought like we were being pulled over by the cops. It was so bad that we literally had to stop and pull over in the middle of nowhere and like regain your thoughts. I literally like rolled in the center of that street, like dying of laughter. I was like, I can't believe that shit just happened. And then everyone had that moment of like taking a piss on the side of the road.
Did you take a piss on the side
no.
of the road?
But it was so
amazing. It's more like a freedom thing, just to be like, I can piss in the middle of
but
nowhere.
But like, it's funny because everyone's having conversations as they're taking a piss while I'm literally like, remember, this is during that time also where like I was having that really bad like coughing and like throat. So like, imagine this. It was like the most vicious cough I've ever had, and I was hacking up my lungs in the middle of the street.
And because like, you're probably laughing like crazy rolling around,
no,
so
exactly.
It's like, it makes you not be able to breathe.
But the fact that no one has ever done that to me before, and the fact of like, it's like a personal, it's a personnel change. Like, because I was like, oh, he's hardcore, he's tough. You know what I mean? So from them having, then grabbing me, he go like, what's going on? Help me, what's going on? I almost died. This is like 3 o'clock in the morning, man. This is like literally like 3 o'clock in the morning. And like, not only that, so after that, when we drive, we switch over. The guy that was driving in the passenger seat is now driving, and we're entering Utah. And like, you know, I finally am starting to fall asleep, and we are literally, I kid you not, less than 5 minutes to the Ritz-Carlton. And you know what happens? We get pulled over by the cops. And so this is like, I was like, this is such a perfect trip. We get pulled over by the cops. The cops tells the driver, you know, we're all friends. Tells him, hey, come out, speak. First thing he says, have you been drinking? You know what I mean? And of course he hasn't been drinking. He's just been fucking sleeping. You know, or trying to sleep. He was falling asleep. And they pull him over, take him out of the car, and they actually do like the whole sobriety test. But not only that,
do they have him like do the alphabet from backwards to forwards? Because I don't even think I can do that like being sober.
I don't know.
I can't even do that right now.
I don't even know if that actually happened. But really, what he did, the whole sobriety, he had to do the blow thing. But what's amazing,
the blow thing.
At this,
you mean the breathalyzer.
The breathalyzer. But what's amazing is at this point, it's like literally almost 6 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean? We've been up the whole entire time. Of course he's going to be tired. He was drifting. That's why they thought he was drunk. But I kid you not, for just this guy, who is, I feel like, was in a perfect spot because he's still in school, you know, and he just randomly got asked to join this because his friend was friends of the same guy or of my coworker. And he's like, hey, what are you doing? Oh, I want to go on this tour. Let's do it. And then what happens is it starts out with just one cop that comes out there. And then as soon as we know it, there's freaking 8 cops and 4 cop cars surrounding us.
Where did they come out of the woodwork?
I don't know. There must be nothing.
You're in the middle of nowhere, too.
No, not this. We're right now the city of Utah.
Oh, okay.
We just arrived in Utah, and we're like, we're so close to the hotel.
The city of Utah. What is that?
Or Phoenix.
Okay.
Sorry. We're in the city of Phoenix.
So that's a bigger city. That's a pretty big, you know, there's like big office buildings and
stuff
from what I've seen. I haven't been there.
It's a real city. Yeah. They have massive dust storms that engulf the whole city, but it's a real place.
It exists.
It's a real place.
So bigger than Richmond or?
Yes, bigger than Richmond. It's a real city.
Richmond's only the capital of Virginia. It's not a big city.
But it was so amazing that after all this stuff, to get pulled over and we have all the cops surrounding us for just this guy, and he has to do the whole entire test. And
is everybody just outside like watching him, or are they inside watching him?
They're some of them in and out, and then when they find out we're touring with the Beach Boys, they want to ask us question about the Beach Boys. You know what I mean? And then and then my producer who did the farting was just like, yeah, man, he's just a kid, dude. He was sleeping. You know, he's good at bullshitting and getting his way by doing that. You know what I mean? It's like, he wasn't drinking anything. You know what I mean? And like, you know, but he's just like, come on, guys, just get us. We're so close to the hotel. He's telling the cops that. And it's like, we're with the Beach Boys and stuff like that. So we finally get out there. I even videotaped it a little bit, or I did a pro interview. And then when we finally get there, it's the freaking Ritz-Carlton is where we're staying at. And I was like, holy crap, it's the Ritz-Carlton. This place looks like a freaking castle, you know?
Yeah.
And then, so finally, at that same point, I go and collapse in my bed, right? And I finally realize this is the freaking first day on tour. physically, literally. Before, I would count that as a trial day, but when we get there to the Ritz-Carlton, I was like, holy crap, this is the first day. This thing is going to be nuts. This is the type of stuff I have to look forward to. This tour is going to be absolutely nuts and tiring and lots of driving. And here we are in Phoenix. You know what I mean? First time ever. Cops, farting, middle of nowhere, weirdness all around.
And
there you go.
We will continue part 2 of the Beach Boys summer experience next week.
Next
on the
week.
Carol and Joe Show.
The New York Comic Con, guys. Happy fall. See you guys there. Hope you enjoyed this so far. It's tiring, but I enjoy it so well.
It's good to document the
That's
memories.
That's right. AstrayProductions.com, curls-studio.com. Check out curls, curls-studio.com/curls. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Hope you had a good time. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
Be excellent to each other. Read some comics and be nice. Be nice. See you later, Carolyn.
Adios. The kind of human wreck is that you love.